Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the Karma You podcast. This is your host, Chloe Brotheridge. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining me. I am a coach and a hypnotherapist, and I'm the author of The Anxiety Solution. Thank you so much for listening today. I am really excited for this week's guest. It is a good friend of mine, Gemma Brady. Now, Gemma is a documentary maker, a creative mentor, and founder of Sister Stories. And she's dedicated her life to creating spaces for people to tell important stories, be it on film, in her writing, or in their community. And she really believes in the healing power of storytelling and the power of the generous act of both speaking and offering deep listening. And she's had a 10-year career, which has seen her create BAFTA award-winning content, documentaries for places like Channel 4, most notably 24 Hours in A&E. And across her career, she's helped hundreds of individuals tell the most intimate, moving stories. And in 2017, Gemma created Sister Stories as a means of offering women an opportunity to come together and experience the transformative power of being seen and heard. And in this episode, we talk about Gemma's journey into doing this work and how we talk about how it wasn't necessarily the most natural thing in the world for her at first to lead these sharing circles. We talk about why it's so powerful to share your story and to be witnessed and to be listened to. And we discuss what actually happens at a sharing circle, because I'm sure some of you might be wondering, you know, I've heard of this or I've never even heard of this, and what actually happens? What do people say? And Gemma also shares the surprising things that she's learned about herself through this experience, and it's really interesting to hear her thoughts on this. Now, listen to the end of this episode. Gemma is offering and a really amazing opportunity for people who feel like they might too want to lead sharing circles and to actually train with Gemma in how to lead these groups. And I've been to one of Gemma's circles and they're absolutely amazing. And as we discuss in the episode, lots of people report that it feels very magical to have that experience. And so if you're interested in finding out more about training with Gemma to lead Sister Stories gatherings, then listen to the end of the episode. I'll post the link to her website in the show notes. It's sisterstories.co. So I really hope you enjoy this episode. I adore Gemma. She's a really good friend of mine. She's one of the most loving and also the most intelligent people that I know. And so I was really excited to have this conversation and be able to share it with you. So hope you enjoy it and send you lots of love.
Welcome, Gemma. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing?
Really well, thank you. Yeah, really well.
Can you tell us what it is that you do and how you got to where you are today?
Yes. So I always find it a little bit hard to describe what I do because I do multiple things, but all of it centres around storytelling. So my entire professional career, I've been a documentary maker. So I've been telling stories professionally and have made lots of films over the years, about various things, and have really sort of immersed myself in the craft of storytelling. So that's one strand of my work. And then the other strand of my work, which is related, is I run something called Sister Stories, which is a women's sharing circle centered around storytelling. And then the final strand is I'm training as a narrative therapist and working with people to use their stories as a way of healing things. So all of that work feels like it's centered around the healing power of storytelling.
Why is storytelling important?
It's such a big question and such a simple one at the same time. So the way I always think about it, and there's so much research to back this up, is that story is the way we make sense of the world. So all of the information we process, it is constructed into some sort of narrative by our brains, and that's how we navigate our lives. But stories historically have been used as, you know, the sort of the fable or the myth. They're constructed as a way of helping us understand how to navigate our lives and how to understand what it means to be human and how to learn from the mistakes that have gone before. Through consuming stories, we learn what it means to be human. And by telling our stories, there's something very liberating about being witnessed in the act of telling our own tale. And I haven't been able, even though I've done this with people thousands of times, I haven't been able to put my finger on what it is about being listened to telling your story. But people have a really profound experience. So in my television work, when you sit people down on camera and you give them a space to tell their story, they come away changed. And I still don't know what that is, and it's a really interesting thing. And a lot of my work at the moment is working out why and what science can tell us and what, you know, anecdotal experience can tell us what's important there.
That's fascinating. I suppose in talking therapy, you're telling a story, and, yeah, and hopefully your therapist is listening with acceptance and just giving you that space to say that. And I'm thinking about things like the Hindu texts and the Bible, where they're using stories throughout to send a deeper message about morality or life. And it seems like we just really resonate and can learn from stories in that way.
Yeah, and I think that we get very used to consuming them, but I also think we need to produce them. And we're producing them all the time in our daily lives by speaking. Anytime we tell a tale of any kind, we're sort of telling a story. But it's this sort of dance between being a consumer and a producer of stories. I think it's really important for people in normal life. And I was reading something recently that really fascinated me, which is that at Harvard Medical School, they have an in-house storyteller, which is someone who, they're called a story therapist or something, and they come and they sit with patients who are really, really ill, and they give them the space to tell their stories. And they're using it as a medical tool.
Wow.
So rather than just like sticking a patient from the television as part of their healing and being that consumer, they're actually encouraging people to actively talk their stuff out, but not within a traditional therapy context, within just, we're here just listening to you and your life. It's really interesting.
Wow. Well, when I think of telling stories, and I wonder if we've had this conversation before about the incorrect stories that we tell ourselves, almost as though we have, I don't know, with a story that I'm a victim, or this story that I'm always going to be abandoned or something like that. And is there, I remember you saying something about changing those stories. Is that part of what you do?
Yeah, so in going back to this idea that we make sense of our lives through telling stories, in our minds all the time we're constructing our own narratives. And all a narrative is a piecing together of different bits of information to make a cohesive strand. So if you've got all of these different possibilities of who you are as an individual, you're really stringing together your identity by linking certain bits of information that you then weave into a narrative thread and say, this is who I am. And there's the way that those threads can be weaved can go in so many different directions. So narrative therapy came out of the idea that we can change those pathways and those threads and quite literally construct a different story about ourselves. Which sounds quite crude as a, you know, like, just change the story. And you hear that on, you know, there's lots of sort of Instagram memes about changing the story we tell about ourselves. But it's actually a really rich and quite nuanced process about making small changes to the way we think about ourselves. There's sort of parallels with CBT and that world, but it's a really powerful tool to quite literally be able to recalibrate all of the information about yourself that's in your head. And you're not changing the information or the facts, you're just seeing it in a slightly new set of sort of story points. And I've done it myself, and it really helps.
Yeah,
like a story I have is that I can't like doing something like this podcast or being on this podcast and being heard is like a terrifying thing. And I always think, I'm not the kind of person who does that. And I've had to do this whole thing about kind of changing the story about, well, why not? And maybe it could be, and you've done it in the past, you know, trying to rewire my own story about that has been really powerful. And here we are.
That's amazing. Love that. I was reading something recently about how in order to save energy, our brains just revert back to the past and these old stories, for example, and we don't actually take in our lives as fresh and new experiences. We're just going back to this old story because actually it's easier to do that. Our brains are always trying to conserve energy. And so actually maybe we need to either change the story or just get better at taking things as they are rather than this old narrative. Can you tell us about your first experience with a sharing circle?
A couple of years ago, I had this idea to set up a storytelling circle for women, which was born out of sitting normal people down in an interview space for documentaries and seeing how profound it was to tell their stories. So I had this curiosity about, like, what would it be like to do this with normal people and how might that work? And had all of these sort of vague notions and decided to set up an experiment called Sister Stories, which was a women's storytelling space. And that was the first time that I'd ever been in that kind of space. So I sort of set up this event, not quite knowing how it would work as an experiment. And people came and they shared their stories and it was really powerful. And subsequently after that, I realised that this was like a whole massive lineage and tradition of people coming together in circle to tell stories in that way. And it's quite funny when I think that, well, I thought I'd invented this thing. It was like really ancient. But there was something very intuitive about it. I just sort of almost knew what the formula should be and how the evening should run. And that was my first experience, just leading one and trying it out and using my background in, you know, I trained in various disciplines to get me to that point. So it wasn't like I just, without, you know, irresponsibly brought together a group of people and opened them up. I'd done lots of training to get to that point. But in terms of a sharing circle, I'd never been in that kind of format before and didn't really know that they existed.
But you later found out that it is an ancient practice. Yeah. People have been sitting around the fire telling stories, I guess.
When you put it, makes so much sense because that's what it feels like. You've got something at the centre and you come together in this really simple way and just talk and listen and share. And it is ancient. And as soon as I did it, it awoke something in me that felt like, oh God, of course, this is perfect. This is what we should be doing. But there's a kind of speaking and listening in that space that we're not used to in normal life. So it feels very ritualized and it can feel a little bit alien if you're not used to it. But there's so much richness there because it allows a deeper level of conversation than we might get if we just went out with our friends for dinner. Or, you know, there's something powerful about being in a room with strangers and sharing that intimate experience of speaking and listening in that ancient way.
So, yeah, people that don't know you already and be able to kind of have a clean slate with people who haven't maybe got judgments or their own preconceptions about you, or
yeah, or people you know who will learn something about you afresh. You know, the kinds of things that come out in that space are very, very different to the kinds of things that might come out in normal conversation, because the invitation is to drop into a different way of being and to sort of go down the layers of what we would normally talk about and go down and go down and go down until we get to a layer of truth that you might not otherwise share with people. And that can feel really precious. So I know I have people who've come to the circles who know each other quite well already and discover the relationship slightly changes and they discover something new about their friends.
That's fascinating. I bet there's lots of people, I know there is, that this kind of sharing would seem quite alien. People that grow up in families where we don't talk about feelings. We sweep everything under the rug. Or maybe people listening that grew up in a family where their family were really loud and they were the quiet one and they didn't get a chance to speak, or they've got friends but the conversations never go to that deeper level, which is surprisingly common. I think I've spoken about this before, about how when I meet up with my friends, the conversation can easily be quite superficial even though we're very close, and actually getting to that deeper level of how are you really, you know, you say you're fine but how are you really, kind of doesn't always happen in every situation. So to have that opportunity to go deeper with people, important.
I think it's just worth saying that it doesn't come naturally to me to do that, so that's one of the reasons it feels important for me to put myself in this situation, because it's not, I feel, I think that there's a real narrative in society now around sharing or oversharing, and there's, you know, on social media there's lots of wonderful vulnerability that's shared, but it's a very public forum to do it in. And sometimes it can be a bit performative as well, you know, that there's almost like performative vulnerability where people feel like they have to open up publicly and show their wounds. And there's absolutely a place for that. And it's really important that people tell their stories publicly. But also, I really believe in there being sort of semi-public spaces where you are witnessed and you're seen, but it's really, it's private. And there's a small group of people there and nothing leaves that room. And you don't have to be doing it in front of however many thousand people online all the time. We need it to happen privately as well. So for those people who are like, oh, I'm not used to this, or that sounds awful, being in that really intimate space first, which, as I say, just would be my worst nightmare at some stages of my life, is a really helpful place to start, because there's only like maybe 8 or 9 people there. Yeah. You can really get into the experience together.
Yeah, I can say certainly from my own experience that when I first started having therapy, even opening up to my therapist was the most hideous, awkward thing I'd ever experienced. I found it excruciatingly difficult. And when I first started going to sort of, I don't know, circles or events where you're sharing, I found it difficult and would get nervous every single time. And still there's a nervousness, I think, that comes with speaking in front of people or sharing things that maybe you haven't told people before. And I think experiencing that nervousness is almost part of the kind of specialness of it, to come out the other side and to be met with that acceptance and to know that you can be vulnerable and get through it and it's okay, I think is a powerful lesson in itself. But why do you think these sharing circles are so powerful? What things have you seen or learned that have surprised you or interested you?
It's really interesting with the Sister Stories events that I run. When I ask people about their experience, I would say it's a really curious thing that happens. About 80 or 90% of people who come who enjoy it use the word magic to describe it. And I think what they mean by magic is that you're in this experience for 90 minutes, 2 hours. It's quite a short amount of time. But what happens there is throughout the course of the evening, you understand something new about humanity. We almost like, I feel like in the circle, we like rise above our everyday lives and almost have this aerial perspective of what it means to be human. You get connected back to big universal themes that uplift you and inspire you. And, you know, we've been talking about sharing quite difficult things, and actually what's shared in circle often is quite lighthearted or fun, or it doesn't have to be your deepest, darkest secret. That's not what it's about. It's simply about hearing other people's experiences and connecting to those that makes you understand on a much deeper level what it means to be human. And it's like going to see a really good film, you know, when you come out of the cinema and you just feel everything because you've taken a couple of hours to connect to your humanity. Or like in the old days, like, you know, like throughout the history of storytelling, in Greek tragedy, the notion of catharsis was that, you know, the story would build to a point in which the audience had a really profound moment of shifting or healing because they were connected to something bigger than themselves, by which I mean the entirety of humanity. It's not like a divinity thing, it's like being human. So that's what seems to happen, and that sounds really, really big, but it happens through a really small set of things in the room. It's curious. It's like a weird alchemy of stuff. I don't know how it works, but it's really special.
Magic. Sounds good to me. Sign me up. What actually happens then? Because I think for people listening might be wondering, so it's a sharing circle, it's to do with storytelling, it feels like magic, but what actually happens, or what do people talk about without sharing obviously people's personal stories?
Well, there's many different types of circles, so it depends what kind you go to. So in Sister Stories, which I lead, there's a really, really simple format. It's so simple that it's almost indescribable when you're not in it. But really, the invitation is you come into a circle space with a group of women. There might be, it's quite a small group intentionally, so sort of 9 or 10 people. And the person leading, there'll be an invitation to think about what you want to give voice to. And you're led through a short meditation, and then the circle's opened for sharing. And then people take a talking piece and they talk about whatever might be on their mind. And it will, throughout the course of an evening, will jolt between hilarity and people sharing really funny things and moving things. And a theme will naturally emerge. Purposefully, I don't set a theme because I think that's quite it sort of limits the experience of sharing. I think that there's something really terrifying when you open a circle wide open and nobody knows what anyone else is going to say, and we all don't know what our experience will be. But as a group, you sort of feel your way through the evening and then leave feeling lighter. I don't know, I find it really hard to describe, and that's one of the things where this sort of magic comes in. But it's not a complicated experience, and I think it's worth saying that as someone who's naturally quiet, I always think it's really important to say that you can come and you don't need to say anything at all. You can just sit and listen, and that's really, really important. I used to hate the idea of going to anything where I'd have to speak publicly, even if publicly only means a handful of people. That would have been terrifying to me. So you can just you can get the experience without necessarily contributing, although most people who think they're not going to say anything come and then actually find themselves opening up. But that's a choice. That's like a slow opening that happens throughout the course of the event. And I've been to many different circles, some which are themed, some which are not, some which have, you know, different practices to help you open up. And I think at the heart of them lie the simplicity of coming together in this ancient way of sitting like around the campfire as humans.
Just a reflection from things that I've experienced in the past is that when people are sharing, it's almost as if I can relate to everything that people are saying. Life might be totally different to mine, but the themes are very much the same. The themes of the universal themes that we all have, like doubt and, you know, worry or insecurity or all of these things. And I think for people who feel, no, I imagine there might be people feeling like, I don't have a story, or what would I say, you know, what I have to say isn't worth something. And actually we all have a story, no one doesn't, and it's amazing how much we can relate to what people say and how powerful that is.
That's a really important distinction. Actually, I use the word story kind of tentatively because I think people think that they have to come and like tell a story in a really majestic fashion, and actually what I mean by my definition of story is making sense of our experience through speaking it aloud. I suppose that's the best way I can describe it. And you don't have to say anything profound. So I found myself once saying, I really want a dog, and this is my experience with animals. And it opened up, sorry, I'm just bashing your microphone. It opened up this whole conversation about people's experiences of having animals throughout their life and what it meant to them. And it felt really a really special conversation. But it doesn't have to be anything profound at all. And you don't have to come and tell your life story. That's not what it's about. And I think, yes, the story is a means of making sense of our experiences, the best way of describing it, because you're right. It's not, you don't have to have anything particular to say. And it's not, you have to stand on a stage or say anything. It's not one of those kind of storytelling events.
So you don't have to prepare a script with a beginning, middle,
script.
And then with a protagonist.
Absolutely not. I can't think of anything worse, actually. It fills me with dread just thinking about it.
What do you think is the usefulness of this in modern times, given that we are so disconnected from each other in lots of ways, and levels of loneliness, particularly amongst young women, that's actually the highest. We often think of loneliness affecting older people, but it's actually young women that are the most impacted. So what's the usefulness of this, do you feel, right now?
It feels to me a really important time for us to preserve in real life connection. And one of the most important things to me about sister stories and the community of people across the UK who are starting to lead circles in their area is this in real life connection, because I feel like so much we have the illusion of being connected to so many people, and we can be, you know, hyper connected through our screens and have a sense that we're in conversation with people all the time. I mean, how many of your friendships are like mediated through WhatsApp? It's quite terrifying. Yeah. You know, or, you know, I have a wonderful Instagram network, but I don't see many of these people. So I really, really feel, I really believe strongly in the importance of coming together in the flesh, because physiologically it's good for us, mentally it's good for us, and there's something very primal about sitting in a space with other human beings and connecting with no alcohol, with no, you know, not over food, not at that superficial level you were talking about earlier, really, really allowing ourselves to sort of strip back to a really basic level of humanity that needs to sit in a room with other bodies and other heartbeats and just be together. And it's so simple and yet so important. And certainly in my life, When I was younger, I was raised Catholic and I used to go to church all the time, and I had places in my community where I would go regularly and I'd know the people there, and there was a level of ritual to it and it felt really special. And when I moved away from the Catholic Church in older life, I realised I didn't have any places to gather. And, you know, there's lots, depending on your religious background and where you live and all those things, you may still have that community, but there's a portion of people in society who don't. And I feel like we need them. We need little pockets of people and places where we can go and just be with people. It's really important.
Absolutely. And I think even people who maybe have had their community or their group of close friends, things start to change as you get into your late 20s and 30s. Some people have children, some people move away, and because of those life changes we end up maybe spending more time on our own or not having those close people nearby. So it's even more important. I'm also thinking about introverts and how we as introverts prefer to have those deeper conversations rather than small talk, and actually this is something like Sister Stories is facilitating the kind of the deeper nourishing conversations that introverts probably need. And maybe they do have lots of, I mean, we have conversations at work or networking and it might be quite superficial, and for an introvert that's very difficult, and we need the more nourishing, deeper chats. I think
I don't know how to do small talk anymore, it's really bad. I need to relearn. But I discovered an interesting thing last year. I always thought I was an introvert because I need a lot of time on my own. I'm like, you know, I crave alone time when I've been around people. And working in the television industry for so many years, it's a really full-on environment. You're with people all the time. So last year, I spent 6 months where I was working primarily on my own. And it was the first time I'd never worked in a team. And I didn't realise how important it was to me to have somewhere to go every day, like a workplace, and to be around people all day. And I realised that I was more extroverted than I thought. And that was the first time that I've really experienced loneliness, I think, because I wasn't interacting with people outside. You know, there was a lot of emails and a lot of texts, but I wasn't seeing people day to day. And having space, you know, having the Sister Stories community and having other places that I can go to and connect to people was my lifesaver, because I need to be working alongside other people, and I need to be in communion with other people every day. I go a bit mad, I think.
Yeah, no, I feel the same actually, because I will spend quite a lot of time working, writing at home, and it's not always the best thing for mental health to be on your own a lot. I think we do need to get out every day. Maybe you're an ambivert, Gemma.
I might be an ambivert. I think I might be. Yeah, I think I might be.
Because there's all different. You can be a shy extrovert. You can be an introverted extrovert. There's all different mixtures.
So we'll have to do a test later.
We need to do a test. Okay. Can you share what this process of setting up these sharing circles has been like for you? What have you learned about yourself?
I always find before I run a circle, I'm absolutely paralysed by fear. And having a group of people turn up, and bearing in mind that the way that you facilitate a circle is very light touch, so it doesn't require lots of talking. As a facilitator, all it requires you to do is to hold this, to open up the space and hold the space. But even that beginning moment where you have however many eight sets of eyes on you, and the expectation fills me with so much dread. It's just really against my nature to do anything like that. And through showing up again and again and again and again to do this work, even when I didn't want to, and having an amazing experience when I did do it, it just taught me to not take fear so seriously. You know, like there's something about that impulse that I have not to do the thing and then to push through it, but not in a kind of self-flagellating pushing through it, but more kind of connecting to connecting to my beliefs about why this work is important, and letting that override fear has really helped. Like now I can talk without my voice shaking. I can sort of dance with fear a bit more, and that's been huge, because I remember the first 10 or so that I did, I would be like a leaf. Be shaking like a little leaf, which I suppose is quite helpful to people who are in the circle who might have the same experience. But it's really been an interesting thing about sort of going against your impulses to protect yourself, which often can be a really helpful thing to follow because those impulses exist for a reason. But to me, it's really broken through my fear, and also showed me that you can have a really gentle style of leadership. You don't need to be like a jazz hands person. You don't need to be really confident or up on stages. You can stand for something in the world that you believe in a really gentle way. And that's been quite it's been quite a beautiful experience.
I love that. I love that idea of taking your fear less seriously as well. We could all do with a bit of that, I think.
I don't do it all the time. It has helped. It has helped. You know, Liz Gilbert has this, in Liz Gilbert's Big Magic, she talks about, she has this conversation with fear in relation to creativity, where she's like, fear, you can come along with me in the car, but you're not allowed to drive. I love that. Like, it's a constant companion, this fear. And it's up to you how seriously you take what it says. And I often think of that image of, like, you know, Liz Gilbert having a little word with her fear and telling it it's not allowed to touch the radio, it's not allowed to read the map, and it certainly can't drive.
That's part of that book really stuck in my mind as well, actually. I think that's brilliant. I'm really glad you've said that, because I think it's so easy to look at people who are leading a group or on the telly or on the stage and to think, they've got it all figured out, they don't experience any fear. You know, it's just easy for them. I'm not like that. I could never do anything like that because I feel scared. And actually, this acknowledgement that it's okay to feel scared, it's okay to be shaking and to still do it anyway, and to know that you can survive doing something scared, you can come out the other side. And actually, that's how you grow your confidence and grow your ability to be able to speak and to then not have a shaking voice and seeing your progress. And just an invitation for people listening to know that whatever you're scared of, it's, you're not the only one that feels afraid. That might sound too obvious to say, but just as a reminder, because I think I've definitely felt like that, of, I feel scared to do this, everyone else is sorted and I'm the only one, but it's definitely not the case.
It's so true. I think that applies to pretty much everything. You were talking earlier about what I've learned through doing Sister Stories, and this applies to my documentary work as well. I just feel like when you look beneath the surface of a person, there's so much stuff going on that by listening to other people talk about how they're feeling and what they're going through, it just connects you to such a level of compassion, one for other people, but two for yourself. Like, God, everyone has these fears and these doubts and all of this surface level stuff bubbling away. And that's a really helpful thing to remember, because often we just look at the surface. And again, it's a really obvious thing to say, but it's really important to remember, and it's very easy to forget, particularly in the social media world. You know, the curated images that we all know are not the truth, and yet we still compare and worry and tie ourselves up in knots about how we perceive other people's lives to be. Hearing the real version of what's going on is really important too.
So knowing that we're not alone, and I suppose as well, when you share something that you're ashamed of, so I don't know, you share in a circle that you feel afraid about something, and then other people say, actually, you know what, I felt that as well. And that takes the shame away, I think, because you realise, oh, you know, it's not that much of a big deal. Lots of other people feel this way as well. And I think it's Brené Brown who says, shame can't survive being spoken.
Yes.
So just saying it out loud, being met with that acceptance, is amazing. And the more, I've done a podcast that was just about shame, but I think it's the root cause of a lot of our unhappiness, because we feel that we're bad or we're wrong or we're broken or there's something uniquely flawed about us. And actually, so it's not the case.
No,
it's not the case at all. So is there anything else that you want to add just about Sister Stories that you think is important to say?
I don't know. It's interesting to try and talk about this thing that I think can only be experienced. If anyone's got any curiosity about what this stuff is like, I'd encourage people to go and try and find a space like this in their area to see how they connect to it.
And obviously, for any men listening, because I think this podcast is about 20% men, it's mostly women, but there are men. There are lots of men's circles as well. It's not just for women. And for men, it's equally, if not more important, to have this space to open up and to share. And so for any men listening, or for women whose partners maybe need that support or need to get things off their chest, that the brotherhood, the connection, we need, you know, men need that and women need the sisterhood equally. Where can people find out more about what you do and what you're offering?
So the best place to find out more about Sister Stories is at sisterstories.co. That's our website. And I'm on Instagram, Gemma Brady, where I share Gemma Brady underscore, sorry, where I share a lot about what we're doing at Sister Stories. And in the last 6 months, I've started to invite women into learning to facilitate circles in their local area, because what I want to try and build is a network of women doing this work in their local community, because different communities have different needs and different women can reach different proportions of the population. And you know, we're building a network nationwide of people doing this work who are supported by one another. So if you're interested in finding out about training to do that, I'm running some in March.
So in March, the training is about learning to lead a circle.
Learning how to hold space. Yeah, learning how to hold space and practice that gentle leadership I was talking about earlier. It takes a particular set of skills to be able to hold space for people in that way and to invite people into talking and listening in that way. So it's something that I'm really enthusiastic about encouraging people, other people, to learn.
Amazing. And on your website, you have Sister Stories events that you run, but also that are all over the country as well, and soon to be all over the world.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you can see that on the website if you fancy joining, and I definitely recommend it. I think it's incredibly powerful and very much needed in our modern times, and particularly for people with anxiety, to have that space to share and to listen and to know that we're not alone. So thank you so much, Gemma.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I would love to hear what you thought of this episode. Come over to Instagram, find me at Chloe Brotheridge, and you can find Gemma at GemmaBrady_. Let us know what you thought of this episode. If you share it with a friend, don't forget to tag both of us. And I would love it if you would share it with others. If you think that there are other people that would benefit from this episode, you could send them an email or screen grab this podcast and WhatsApp it to them. But I would so, so appreciate your support in spreading the word. Thank you so much. And if you want to hear from me, I send out a newsletter once a week. I give tips and insights and freebies on the newsletter that I don't give out on other platforms. So if you want to get in on the things that I only share on my email, you can come on over to karmayou.com/free and sign up at the link there to get my emails. Anyway, lots of love. Thanks so much for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.